As an advisor, I'm always curious about what is the path that most people don't choose. It may be the most difficult and challenging, but it will get me to my goal faster than everybody else. So we are launching Elite Plus. This is the community for advisors that really want to engage. You get to hang out with me a couple times a month live, asking questions, trying to grow our practice together. You'll get for free our financial planning software that'll help you deliver a better financial planning experience to your clients. You'll have access to Q&A cohorts with other advisors, and you'll have our full library of resources. This is for you if you are ready to go all in. If you want to be challenged to grow, you need to come hang out in Elite Plus. Join the Elite Plus membership today. Visit gobeelite.com and experience the program that transforms advisors into leaders.
This is the Elite Advisor Podcast. Today, we're going to hang out with Tim Smith. Tim is an active advisor. Tim has gone from working at somebody else's firm to growing his own firm, leading hundreds of advisors, managing billions of dollars of assets. And even now, he is just getting started. So me and Tim are going to unpack our journeys becoming advisors, how we've discovered what type of advisor we wanted to be, so that hopefully you can reflect and decide, what do I need to do to become more of the advisor that I see myself being? I love hearing how people found their way, because I think most of us at some age were like, we're not going to be selling financial products and making cold calls. That was not the our dream during career day. But most advisors I know are like, this is who I am and this is what I want to do the rest of my life.
Well, I knew that I wanted a career that involved the investment business primarily, and that if I worked hard and persevered, I would achieve a level of success, because I believed I had the fundamental gifts for it, you know, the underlying abilities for it. And that was one of the things about acting that I saw. I saw people who were much better actors than I were, who were in their 30s and 40s and were still looking for their big break. Mm. And I was like, man, I don't have the patience to wait till I'm 45.
No.
You know, to work for 23 years and hope I get a break eventually. And so talent and success in acting are not tied together. There's just too much luck involved. The right Wow. part, right director, the right script. You know, I wanted something where if I worked my ass off at it, I kind of knew I was going to do well. And this field has turned out to be that.
What would you say? Because that's one thing we in our coaching and our podcast that I reject, because it wasn't motivational for me to be like, hey, get in this career, cold call people for the next 20 years, and as long as you don't give up, someday you're going to make good money. And I was like, that's the worst flyer for a career you could ever write. Then I'm like, there's got to be a better way. And now we have the issue of most advisors, you know, we're not having young advisors come in at the rate we need to for retiring advisors.
Yeah.
But somehow we're missing the mark on creating like a path and a motivational story to pull people in. And so my hope is like, hey, it doesn't have to take as long as, you know, it might seem it takes. It's always challenging, but is there a way to put that level of effort and overcoming difficulty where you actually get results faster than maybe they're telling you it's going to take, they being the industry? So in your story, what have you learned as you've gone to say, yeah, there's the average path, which you can take and maybe just survive, but hey, here's some lessons that you can apply to hopefully get there much faster.
Well, I would say the first thing that every advisor should have is a strategic plan for themselves. So that involves looking at what you think your strengths are, your weaknesses, where your opportunities are for either, you know, organic, naturally occurring friend and family type business versus cold calling business, or, you know, buying a practice, whatever it might be. And what the threats are. When you're early in your career, your biggest threat is you have no clients, where you lack adequate cash flow to build upon it, you know? So, but have a plan and work with a mentor on the development of that plan. Somebody in the business for 20 years plus who has, you know, kind of seen a lot, seen what worked, what didn't work, seen what kind of personality styles tend to do well with what kind of clients or in what business model. You know, there are some people, for example, who are meant to be cold callers and, you know, let's call them hunter-gatherers, okay?
Sure.
That's probably most advisors. I mean, an awful lot of advisors, they have the temerity to think that they can go out and just get a client, you know, go out, look, call, whatever, ask for referrals and get clients. Then there are, and by the way, they may or may not be terribly skillful financial planners or advisors or whatever, but they have the ability to go rainmake, you know, make rain. Then you have advisors who are terribly technically skilled as financial planners, but they're not that good at prospecting. They're not that good at bringing in clients. So that kind of a person has to really look at, you know, okay, is cold calling a route for me? Probably not. Is buying a practice a route for me? Probably a much better one. Or being a, you know, an associate in a firm where you're taking over smaller clients, let's say, just where you don't have to prospect.
Sure.
You know, so the path is really dependent upon the person's skill set from my standpoint, and strategically looking honestly at yourself and having someone, that the purpose of the mentor is having someone who will be honest with you and say, no, Tim, you're a number nerd and you shouldn't be trying to do X. You should be doing Y instead, because you're much more likely to, you know, do well in that, in the path, in that kind of a path instead. Because I can tell you, in the firm that I started in, it was a hunter-gatherer firm. If you weren't a hunter-gatherer, you just didn't survive. And you ended up, you know, either being bounced or bouncing yourself out of the firm. So having a real and serious and objective, fair plan as to what strategies are you're going to put to use, because there are multiple ways to get in. You've seen a few. I've seen a few. Lots of other people have seen others. There are the big firms, right? You could still go to a Merrill Lynch, try to get into a Merrill Lynch or a Morgan Stanley or something, and go through a really rigorous training program, build up some clients, and eventually leave if you want to be independent. That's very painful, very hard to do, but you can still do it that way, or you can join an existing firm and work your way up in that firm, you know, private firm, independent firm of some kind. You can join an insurance agency, maybe one that has, you know, a bent towards whatever really interests you. There are multiple paths, and then multiple ways to succeed once you're in one of those paths. That's all strategies and tactics, right? You know, so...
does feel like the core of our business is, can you get somebody's attention, show them you have something to offer, and then get them to take action? I think to some degree, and then I know for me, the communication was not a strength naturally, just the household I grew up in, the people I was around.
You seem like a good communicator here on a podcast.
And then that's where I had to say, could I develop that skill, or is it just not for me?
Yeah.
And so I've met so many advisors, it's fascinating, where I'm like, I'm surprised you're a successful advisor. Like, it, whether it's your communication style is a little off, or you don't fit the stereotypical advisor that maybe when I got in the business, I would have said, oh, this is what the person looks like, talks like, walks like. That it was a little comforting to me to say, like, okay, there's not one way to be. Like, because I don't think I'm that thing yet.
Definitely, you know, I can tell you, there is no one way to be other than determined. I would say multiple personality styles can succeed if they're determined. But like you just said, they ultimately have to have the skill of communicating concepts, critical analysis of differences between different potential actions, and then a call to action. This is what I think you should do, and here's why. Here's why I think this would be the best for you. Out of all these options that are out there for you, this is why I think it would be best for you. If you can't do those basic things, then the perseverance doesn't really help. But you can be kind of nerdy like me, a little, you know, a little number nerdy like me, or you can be gregarious and affable and everything else, like an average, you know, or a hard charging salesman type.
That's true.
You know, they can all do well, but they have to have that, some fundamental core things.
Yeah. When it comes to drive, tenacity, I know for me, when I look back, there was times where I was like working hard, you know, it's like, hey, are you climbing the wall? But you realize you get to the top, you're climbing the wrong wall. And I think I look back and I was frustrated when I was like head down trying to go a direction, but I realized I didn't know enough up front to ask the questions of like, is that really who I want to be? So I was part of a big insurance firm and I head down, made some awards, and I realized like, wait, I don't think I want to sell insurance for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Nobody really stopped me on day one and said, hey, Sten, there's four kinds of advisors. You get to pick which one. And I was like, that clarity would have been so helpful to know up front. You know, do you want to be a rainmaker closer? If so, here's the three skills you need. If you want to be a technical person that builds plans, here's the three skills you need. I do think there's an element of, you know, a black belt is just a white belt that never gave up. But if one route's going to take you 1,000 hours to be a black belt, but it's like, hey, there's another one that's going to take you 100. Neither is easy, but one can actually be accomplished more intentionally and faster. Yeah. I don't know if our industry is presenting that option very often.
Well, I think, you know, it's still a very fragmented industry, and that's by design. It was a cottage industry, basically, when I started, especially the RIA space. Was very fragmented. It's becoming much more consolidated today than it was when I started in the industry. But there are certain skills that have to be there fundamentally, and then everything else can kind of fit around it. But to your point also, you know, sometimes you don't really know what the hell you're getting into when you don't know the industry.
Yeah.
You know, I came into I had a similar experience to you in the sense that I remember my final interview with the CEO of the firm that I joined, and all he did was talk about insurance. And you know, I was much more interested in the investment side. Now it didn't stop me from joining, but it probably should have been a red flag that there was going to be an awful lot of insurance orientation coming at me. By the way, just a funny story, like there was no coordination between the guy who recruited me and that final conversation. The stories were a mile apart.
Oh, no.
And
but you were already pot committed, so you were like, it's happening.
Yeah, you know, the company was pretty damn successful considering that little small problem. But so I ultimately started my own company 10 years in. As an investment advisor, an RIA firm. I went fee-based in 1988 and started my own RIA in 1995. Mm. And part of the motivation for that was that I still felt too much emphasis on insurance in the company I had joined, when to me, insurance was something that had its place, and I placed a lot of insurance where I felt it was needed, but I never oversold it. And I never looked for a way to sell a policy where there wasn't the need for it.
Yeah.
And I sold some very big policies, most of it estate planning, because I really did believe that it was the best option. I literally would lay out Section 6166 and loans and insurance as the options to, you know, pay estate taxes. And that never failed. Because no one looking at the loans or the 6166 wanted to put their family through that when they could afford to buy the insurance now.
Yeah.
So, but that's the nerd in me.
Sure.
You know, I had to prove it with numbers that it was going to make sense. And when people saw the numbers that their families were going to be paying, you know, the insurance made a lot of sense at that point. So I never oversold it. I sold a lot of it. I just never oversold it. But I also wanted to really focus on the investment business. That's what I always wanted to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me as well, if every advisor listening is not asking about insurance, you know, if you're saying you're doing financial planning, but you're just managing somebody's money and calling them once a year, you're not really doing financial planning.
Sure.
If you say you're a financial advisor, but the solution to every problem is an insurance policy, you're not really a financial advisor. But yeah, we bring up insurance all the time, but I appreciate the way you put it. It's like, no, we're selling it. We're not overselling it. Because at different points in my career, I remember feeling that part of me inside where I'm like, it's needed, but it can't always be the solution to every problem all the time. And that's why, you know, finding a more balanced approach, which most firms I'm working with or coaching, they're all moving in that direction where it's like, hey, we'll let you do financial planning, get paid for it, which is kind of the most emerging area of our industry to generate revenue. And hey, you can manage money, we'll give you some credit for that. And then, hey, insurance is always going to be there. But yeah, there's been periods in my career where I was like, this is way too heavy. Like it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody knows what feels right to them. Mm-hmm. And it's hard when you've invested your career, you've put your career in the hands of other people. And it's hard to sit back and go, you know, this might have been a mistake, or I'm not sure I'm really fitting in here. And now you got to make an exit plan of some kind. Yeah, it's a big challenge. It's a very hard thing to do.
It is. Yeah. And I found myself at different points holding pretty tightly. Like I started trying to shift the place I was to try to match me. And I realized I burnt some bridges, like, cause they're not asking for my help to change who they are. But if I can just change their system, I can stay here, until I was like, oh, my season is ended. Like, they're not asking for my help. Like, I need to go find out where I can be more full. But at the same time, leaving is not always the option too. I've done that before. I was like, oh, this isn't a perfect fit. I'm out of here. And I look back and I'm like, oh, those problems exist anywhere I go. And so it is a very complicated, tricky process that you probably shouldn't jump into, but also delaying it and staying miserable and not true to yourself is also not the path.
Right. Right. Yeah. And similarly to you, I've been in pretty much both places. And I've only ever been with the one company or my own company. Mm. My company today is a broker-dealer investment advisor platform for over 100 advisors around the country. So I work with a lot of advisors also. And, you know, most of them stay for years because I think we've created a good culture and a good environment, and we support them and give them what they need to do their work. But you know, sometimes somebody comes in and in 6 months, they're like, sorry, this really wasn't what I thought I needed.
Yeah.
And I need more support, or I need more of this or more of that. And I wouldn't want to be that person, having just, you know, made a change and realizing you got to make another one. Cause it's hard to change. Everybody knows the worst thing to do as an advisor is to transition your book to someplace else.
Yeah, it's very disruptive. That I would, for most advisors we coach, it is pretty far down the list to, hey, you should leave firms or move. Like, there's so much personal development, sales skills, communication skills that need to be developed that, like, okay, if you're eventually going to become the person that should make that move, that will be successful in this next life, that can emotionally handle the pain you're about to cause yourself by making that transition. I think there's been times I made it too quick and I lack some wisdom in the strategy behind it. There's times I'd made that shift for the wrong reasons. And then there's some times I made that shift and I was like, I should have done this sooner. So I think it's there's so much to that, that when I look back I've probably done it 3 or 4 times now as I've tried to find myself in this industry. I think there's so much that can be done where you are today that'll help you before you jump to that.
I agree. And I think, you know, when I look back at my younger self, when you're in your 20s, you really don't even understand yourself.
Yeah.
You know, I thought self-aware person, but I didn't really understand.
If you would have told me that when I was 20, I would have tried to fight you, Tim. I had it all figured out.
The time is here. Our Overcoming Resistance course is now live. I would give anything to go back in time and have this information earlier in my career. I would have wanted to reject average and recognize the most important decisions I should make as a business owner. Visit gobeelite.com to access the course now. I wish I would have had this sooner, and now I'm giving it to you.
Well, I had a father who was a philosophy teacher. So, I came from a more contemplative background, probably, you know, where I'm more thoughtful, cerebral, not quite as, sure of myself, to be honest with
That's
you.
That's good. Sounds healthy.
Yeah. Yes and no. Everything has its pluses and minuses, right?
True.
So, but I think, so I hardly knew myself and I hardly really understood you know, I thought I knew what I liked to do and what I didn't like to do. I thought that I knew what I wanted in life. And, you know, I had high expectations or motivations from a financial standpoint. And it took years to kind of grasp that, you know, just do the right thing long term. It all works out. You'll be as successful as you can imagine. But self-development, growth, personal growth, all of those are the things you need to think about also, in addition to a good plan for yourself and hard work. Yeah. Because a good plan doesn't matter if you haven't improved yourself at all, your skills, you know, your self-awareness, things like that. So I commend you, Sten, for what you're doing for people.
Thank you. No, I enjoy it a lot. Partly, I think my story is that I didn't have it, you know, and I would have killed for an advisor that was maybe not 30 years, 40 years older than me, making $10 million. Like, that felt so far away.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, I want to be that guy, but that feels so unreachable at this moment. But like, hey, is there somebody just a little bit farther ahead of me that's like, wow, I want to do, I think that feels attainable. And so hopefully, yeah, a lot of stuff we're creating is like, we know you're not where you need to be. There's a lot you need to learn, but, it's doable. And for me, the visual is almost like we're all driving down the road. You know, I think some of us are, our windshields are just pretty dirty. And there's an element of like, hey, I'm either going to not fly off the cliff or I'm going to actually end up where I want to go if I can clean the windshield, which a lot of it is mindset, awareness, which I fought hard. Because for me early on, it was like, if you would have told me some of this stuff in my 20s, I would have said, Tim is attacking me personally. He doesn't know who I am, my story. Like, the resistance would have been so strong. Like, it would have been a fire in my body. And there's probably, I could probably point to some things of where that came from, but there's just, you know, the Lord put something in me that was just, if channeled incorrectly, what was would fight you for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
And it's taken me time and pain to figure out like, wait, that's still in me. And it's a good thing if I can channel it the right way.
Yeah.
And not let it, you know, be in the driver's seat maybe as much as it was in the past.
Yeah. Well, I use 20 years. 10 years is probably even a decent number in terms of experience. But also, I think it depends on what kind of firm the person has been in, what environments the person has been in. And like you, have they seen a few different environments?
Sure.
So they can discern differences, and in particular, ones that were not evident at first.
Yeah.
You know, what are the red flags, or what are things that, I wish I had known this going into it, or I overlooked it because I wanted to believe that something was going to fit. You know, so the wisdom and experience of that person are really the key things, I think, more so than how many years in the industry or, you know, whatever it might be, the breadth of experience and also a willingness to be frank with you. You know, to really tell about how they see you or how they see what you are telling them. But any coach, any mentor, you know, has to be willing to do that to be effective.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and I wish I would have had this, but now when I hire young advisors, you know, there's part of me inside that's hoping for it, and I'll coach them to it, but for them to come and say, how am I doing? How do you experience me? You know, I was like that. I never even thought about asking people that. You know, my idea was like, this is who I am. You need to get better interacting with me as opposed to, hey, how do you experience me? And so it's like, it took me a long time to figure that part out of how brave are you? Because I think it's brave to go ask for somebody's feedback on and be ready for what you hear. Because once you know it, you got to do something with it. And how do you experience me? How do you think I'm doing? What can I get better at?
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people do that.
I would argue that if I were talking to somebody with limited experience in the industry today, that I would be telling them that it needs to be an attitude shift if they want to progress, because it's a lifelong learning experience. It's a lifelong, gathering of understanding of the business, the industry, the people, the players in the industry, the technologies of the industry. You know, there are many different facets to this industry. And if people don't want to open themselves they're only hurting themselves. You know, it's forgive me for saying it, but it's just ego that stops us from accepting that someone might know better than we do, right? You know what I mean?
And for me, I had to get to the point where I was like, what do I have to lose by at least listening? May not do anything with it. I may not be to a place of maturity and humility to like to put it into action, but like, what do I have to lose by even just hearing it and receiving it? Because there was a point for me where I was like, I couldn't even do that because of what it would do to me. If any feedback was you questioning what I'm doing, my value, like it was very intense in my story until I at least got to the place where I was like, I can hear you. I'm not to a place yet where I'm going and proactively asking Tim for feedback, but if he gave it to me, I could at least sit in it.
Yeah.
But eventually it took me a while to actually, no, I'm going and not seeking it out. Like, I'm going to call Tim. I'm going to pay Tim. Like, whatever it takes to get the information I need to get better, I'm willing to do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I use the term the forgotten asset class, which is most people investing in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And most advisors, and I'll say this at times, where like, if you're funding your 401k or funding your Roth IRA, or your HSA as a financial advisor, but you're not aggressively investing in your own development, you're missing it. Like, this is a 100x investment. You know, the stock market doing 8 to 12% a year, like, great, we'll get to that. If you're in your 20s and 30s, like, every dollar you can put your hand on needs to be put towards speaker training, business development, coaching, like that. That's the secret sauce if you can really unlock it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree. That early stage of the career, there's a tendency to get a little carried away with making a bunch of money, a lot of commissions or whatever, a lot of fees.
Sure.
And thinking, I can coast now. You know, the hard work's over, right? And the hard work has really just begun if you want to optimize what you can be in life. You know, this is life stuff. This isn't even industry stuff, really, because you're going to, all of this affects your marriage if you get married one day. It all affects how you raise children if you have children one day. You know, are you going to teach your children to be people that are open, thirsty for knowledge and learning and experience? Or are you going to teach them that they already know it all and they don't need anybody, you know? And then what are they going to be when they get older? They're not going to be growing. They're not going to be growth oriented. And I can tell you at my age, I am growing now faster than I probably have in the last 20 years or so. Nice. I'm really excited with where I'm at, the work that I'm doing, some different things that I'm doing. And I've been more energized than I was probably when I was in my 40s by what I'm doing. Because in my 40s, it was the usual. You know, you're just trying to grow. But not something that, you know, you're uniquely capable of. There's a coach, not to talk about other coaches then, but there's a coach, I won't name him, but, you know, his whole thing is about focusing on what is your unique skill that really, really sets you apart, and emphasizing that your time is best spent doing that. So as an example, to go back to the hunter-gatherer, hunter-gatherers shouldn't spend their time developing financial plans for people. They can do financial planning, but they should hire somebody to crunch the numbers and, you know, take all the data in and everything else, and they should be doing the review of the plan, the presentation of the plan, the implementation of the plan, the management of the money, if that's what they want to do, or outsourcing the money management, because money management is largely a commodity anyway.
Sure.
And so, you know, if you can just go gather assets and put it with third parties who can manage it extremely well and are just focused on that, spend your time gathering money. So figuring out what is your unique thing, that's a hard thing. And that's where a great coach can come into play also. You know, helping you focus on identifying what is a skill that you really have that's beyond, and that would, and then monetizing that.
That's good.
You know, really building a plan around that as to how you will monetize that skill. And by the way, that's fun stuff from my standpoint. I love strategy and, you know, talking to younger advisors about all this kind of stuff also. It's one of the benefits of age and wisdom. You know, you can see it faster than most people, I think, faster than the young people themselves would see it.
Yeah. You know? So at this stage, what's your biggest place of resistance you're hitting? Like, obviously you've learned lessons, you've had a lot of success, but you said you're fired up more than ever. Like, what's the challenge you're taking on? What's the tension you're having to sit in? Biggest lesson you're learning?
Here's the challenge I'm taking on. I've created something in the investment world that's it's sort of like structured notes, but it's a little more advanced. And I think I can market it to family offices and very wealthy people.
Nice.
I've never really gone after those markets in my whole career. I've worked with high net worth. So $2 to $10 million type clients has been most of my thing. Now what I want to do is have a $20 million minimum and go after pensions, foundations, and ultra high net worth. And so, I'd like to have $1 billion under management personally with 20 clients in 5 years. You know, that's a great challenge.
Yeah, that's a bold goal. I like it.
But that's a big, fat, hairy goal right there. You know?
It is.
To somebody who's at Merrill Lynch and has $3 billion under management, that doesn't sound like much, right? But when you've run a company for 30 years like I have and haven't marketed for clients, really, you know, clients came to me, just referrals and stuff, but I have not developed a plan and gone headlong at the market to attack a market with something. It's the most fun, exciting, energizing thing I've done in a long time, because I feel like I'm starting over now with all the wisdom and knowledge that I didn't have.
Now you're ready. Now you're ready to go out there.
Yeah, I'm finally ready. You know, ready to make a career out of this damn thing.
I love it.
Yeah, so you know, that's what's going on for me right now, and it's fun and exciting, and the whole thing suits me well because it is very number oriented. It's very mathematical what I'm doing, and it involves options and some other stuff, and it's just, you know, really different from what most advisors would talk to people about. So, it's exciting, and I'm at the best point in my career. You know, people say to me, like friends of mine say to me, "You're going to retire, Tim?" You know, I'm like, man, I'm at the peak of everything I am. Why the hell would I give it all up now? Especially, I'm high energy. My father lived into his 90s. My mother is now 90. I expect longevity. By the way, my father worked till he was 87. I don't know why I would stop. Like, I do everything. I have the time to do everything with my life that I want to do. So I don't know why I would stop doing this. It's the most fun, the most exciting, no desire to cut back at all.